You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've been listening, to Hot Texas, and there's the CD cover.
A Hot Texas Swing Band.
By our friend Alex Dormont.
Yeah. We are so excited to have you with us tonight for episode 136.
Who's on?
Oh, my goodness. He is waiting in the wings. Please welcome featured author guest tonight, Don Bentel. Don.
Hey, how are you?
Glad to have you here.
Happy to see you here. Where are you?
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Where are you joining us from tonight?
Say again?
Where are you joining us from tonight?
I am in my ranch in Florence, Colorado, south of Florence, Colorado.
Okay. So,
Where's Florence? You know, how far from Denver or from Colorado Springs?
I'm about an hour south of Colorado Springs and about 2 hours south of Denver.
Got it. Okay.
And if I recall, the name of your ranch, which you just shared, is named after a book.
It's named after one of my best-selling westerns, Strongheart. Yeah. It's called the Strongheart Ranch, and I have a registered brand, the Strongheart Ranch brand.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking to a hero and a cowboy.
I don't know what direction to go.
He does everything. And a rancher. And, you know, he's just a
I'm a gentleman. I'm a gentleman rancher. I used to have a herd of cattle, and I used to have, various other things, peacocks and chickens and all that. Now I have two horses, a barn cat that I've had for 17 years that we spoil. And a German Shepherd and a Chihuahua and a most beautiful woman in Colorado who I'm married to.
That sounds like one loving household. That's what that sounds
like. Well, how long have you folks been on the ranch?
How long?
Yeah.
On the ranch.
I bought this ranch in 2010. I moved to Canyon City, Colorado in 1982 from Ohio, because I grew up in Ohio wanting to be a cowboy. So I moved out here in 82 and became a cowboy. Simple as that.
Jim, you have a bio.
A bio?
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah. Why don't we go ahead and...
we get into it.
Yeah, we'll go in and we'll get Don's bio going here.
Okay. All right. Don Bendel. A national treasure. Tonight's featured guest, Don Bendel, is a tracker, a rancher, a Vietnam combat veteran, a four-time number one best-selling author with 32 books currently in print worldwide. With over 3 million copies sold, his writing style has been likened to Louis L'Amour and Zane Grey. It's a testimony to the truth of write what you know. 100% disabled Green Bay Beret Vietnam veteran and Special Forces captain, Don Bendel is a 1995 inductee into the International Karate and Kickboxing Hall of Fame and retired Grand Master instructor in 5 martial arts. Tonight we'll be chatting about his recently released adventure and military thriller, Old Soldiers Never Die. Welcome, Don. Glad to have you on.
Well, thank you so much. I want to meet this guy. He sounds wonderful.
Yeah, really.
And we are meeting. We're meeting him right now. Oh my goodness! So, we did just between the first conversation and Jim's bio, we touched a little bit on your background. But Don, you have been involved in so many things. What a life you have lived!
God has really blessed me.
Yeah, every time I pick up this book or I go back and read, even reading about you on Wikipedia and different places, like, oh my goodness. So you and I have something in common that we discovered, and that's Boy Scouting. Yeah. Do you want to just touch briefly on you and the Boy Scouts?
Well, my dad was very dedicated to scouting, and he was buried when he passed away in a scout uniform, and he had six scout executives as pallbearers. And he just loved scouting. When I grew up, and I was in the Army and I was in Special Forces, one day I got called into the deputy commanding officer's office for the 3rd Special Forces Group. And I was a captain at that time, and I'd been medically evacuated from Vietnam, so I had a desk job, and I couldn't do anything else, and they wouldn't let me go back to Vietnam. And anyhow, this Colonel O'Shaughnessy, he said, I've read that you have an extensive background in scouting. And I said, well, yes, sir, a little bit. And he said, good. You just volunteered to be the scoutmaster of our new scout troop that the 3rd Special Forces Group is going to sponsor. And so I started a scout group with a sergeant first class, an E.C., who worked with me, and we recruited kids from the children of, Green Berets, and up 200 and some kids in the troop, and that troop is still in existence today, as I understand it. Yeah. I was with the 3rd group then, and it got deactivated for a while, and I went to the 6th group, and they took over sponsorship, and then they got deactivated, and then they reverted it back to the 3rd group. Mm-hmm. So it's still going strong as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. This group, are they in Ohio too, or are they someplace else?
Where were they based?
Oh, that was at Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, and your character, major character, who we'll talk about in a little greater detail from Old Soldiers Never Die, Brent, he often thinks to himself the Scout Oath. And it was quite fun as a reader discovering the passage where he talks about how important the oath is even to him in the contemporary time of the book. And I thought that is so lovely that you put that in there, Mr. Author. That was really lovely.
Well, that character, Brent, actually, Brent is named for one of my sons who's also a 100% disabled Green Beret combat veteran. And I have another son, Josh, who's 100% disabled Green Beret combat veteran. And then I have two other sons besides that, and two daughters besides that. But anyhow, those two followed my footsteps near in Green Berets and went to Vietnam, earned their CIBs and earned their stripes, so to speak. One retired as a master sergeant, the other medically retired as a sergeant first class. Right. And they both are 100% disabled veterans, just like I am.
Mm-hmm. You know, Don, you got a really strong military family there. Mm-hmm. I had a couple questions. One, when were you serving over in Vietnam?
What did I do in Vietnam?
When were you over there?
Oh, I was there in 1968, 1969. I was the executive officer and civil affairs psychological operations officer of Doc Peck. It was a special forces A camp. We had a 12-man team, and we lived with 7,000 J-E-H, it's spelled mountain yards. the Mountain Yard Tribes people are nomadic, and they're very much akin to the American Indian of the 1800s. There's 31 tribes, and each has its own language, its own customs. The men wear loincloths, the women are bare-breasted, and they wear black skirts called atoks. And they're very primitive. They were very primitive and very pro-American, and they were the toughest fighters in all of Vietnam. And so we hired them as mercenaries. We had a private checking account. Yes, it was from the CIA. And we paid them from that, and we hired them, and then we equipped them with old World War II vintage, you know, M1 carbines and things like that, you know, 30 caliber machine guns and all the old stuff. And we trained them and taught them tactics. And but we also taught them animal husbandry, and we, you know, built churches for them and brought in Christian missionaries and introduced them to Christianity. They had a very good relationship with Green Berets, and we had a wonderful relationship with them, and it's still that way today.
You know, interesting. That's great. You know, I had never heard of this group until you mentioned, yeah, until you started talking about them on Tuesday night with us when we were having a prelim interview.
Yeah.
Kind of fascinating, no?
That's fascinating. There's a gentleman, Billy Waugh, that you, I think, had a huge influence on you. Do you want to chat for a moment about Billy? Because we know he shows up in the book, too, doesn't he?
Billy, I patterned a character, Billy Williams, in the book after Billy Waugh, because Billy and I worked together on some intel projects. And Billy, he passed away a couple years ago, June of 2023. He passed away at 93 years old. And a few years before that, I came in my office one day, and I had a retired Green Beret Sergeant Major with me. And Billy was his hero, and I let him talk to Billy on the phone. And I said, "What have you been doing?" And he said, "Oh," he said, "I just got back from doing a halo jump." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, 9,000-foot halo jump. I went out with some buddies today and did it." And I said, "How old are you?" And he said, 88. And but he passed away when he was 93. Billy actually tracked down Carlos the Jackal and kept him under surveillance for 2 years. And then the CIA didn't want us to take credit for nailing Carlos the Jackal, so they wanted the French to get credit for it. So Billy turned him over to the French, and Carlos the Jackal is now serving a life sentence in a French prison. And Billy also had Osama bin Laden under surveillance for 2 years, and he did, as a CIA agent, he did 4 formal requests to assassinate him. This was in the early days of the Al-Qaeda, and he was seeing him every day. And he said, "It would be easy for me to take him out. This guy's a major threat, and he's got this group called Al-Qaeda, which means the front." And Bill Clinton nixed it. He was president at the time, and he said, "No, he's not that big a threat. Just let him go." And so that was it. And
it caused us to have to contend with him for quite a while. You know, this Billy, I looked him up on the internet, you know, after we talked about him. This man is a one-man army.
Yeah,
he was.
Billy
was the living legend among Green Berets and CIA agents. He's the only CIA agent that's actually been able to come public. I have several other friends that retired with the CIA, but they're not allowed to tell that.
Mm-hmm.
It's illegal to actually tell if you're a CIA agent. Billy got away with whatever Billy wanted to get away with. He was just very colorful, wonderful man, very much a patriot, and just a great guy. Loved his wife very much, Lynn, who's still a friend of mine. And she's read this book and she loves it. So anyhow, I patterned that character, Billy Williams, after Billy Waugh.
Right.
I understand. One quick question for you before you move on.
Yes.
Would you just give a quick definition of 100% disabled?
Well, you know, I have personally that they give you a rating. Like if you have PTSD, they might give you 40% rating. And if you have, like, I wear hearing aids, I'm deaf, and I have tinnitus. I have ringing in my ears 24 hours a day. And I've had that since 1969. It won't go away. My back's been broken in 4 different places, 4 different times. I also have a couple bulging discs in my neck. I have scoliosis. That's why my head kind of turns to the right. I have just a number of things, and they give so many points of disability for each thing. And they have you, you know, get they go through your medical records and they give you physicals and all that stuff and MRIs and everything to prove each thing. I technically, when they added up my points, I'm 265% disabled. But and both my sons are the same way, but they can only pay you up to 100%. So you get paid 100%, and all three of us get paid 100% disability. And just thanks to God, I'm not in a wheelchair. I've had many friends who were and teammates who were. There were 12 guys on my team at Duck Peck. There's 3 of us left now. Mm-hmm. And I just visited with one, Jim Selders, who lives in Oklahoma City. And he and his wife and my wife and I went out to lunch together just like a month ago. I was there for the Cowboy Hall of Fame. So anyhow, that's what happens. They just give you a rating. If you have your legs blown off, it's kind of easy to do 100%. But a lot of times people are like I am and my sons are very disabled, but people don't know it. I have a 3-wheeler downstairs the VA gave me. I have a walker that I just used a few days ago. I have a cane that I use sometimes, but I work out 7 days a week. That keeps me alive. And I have horrible arthritis, osteoarthritis, but I'm not whining. I mean, you know, I volunteered for Vietnam and I signed up for it, so I'm not whining. It's just, it is what it is, like they say.
When we're going to take a very quick break, Don, and when we come back, we're going to be taking an in-depth look at Old Soldiers Never Die, where the main character, Brent, has a lot of what Don just shared with us, our situations that he has in his life. So if you are a writer like Don, find out what our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. If you follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Clicks by Madison, we tip our hat to Janelle. She does all our graphic designs. Find out what they can do for you. And when we come back, as promised, we are going to be getting into this riveting, fabulous military thriller, Old Soldiers Never Die. Stay right where you are, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer with special guest Don Bendel. We're going to be talking about his book, Old Soldiers Never Die.
Yeah.
You know, just to finish up at the previous conversation, you know, I mentioned to Bobby the other day, you know, we were talking about you after the show, maybe before the show. And I said, you know, it's because of guys like Don that we win wars. He is a true warrior. Mm-hmm. And I can't say any more than that. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Old Soldiers Never Die. Where did that title come from?
That came from the MacArthur quote. Old soldiers never die and they just fade away. So I took it from that. And because, you know, if you're, especially if you're a former Green Beret, you kind of think like you're never going to die. And well, I'm not going to. I'm a very devout Christian also, and I know I'm not going to die. I'll be around forever. And hopefully my family members will too. But in any event, one thing I want to say is I have to keep looking over at the screen. I told you I'm deaf. So besides wearing hearing aids, I have to look at you two when you're talking to read your lips. So I apologize. I hope it's not distracting to the readers to see me looking over every once in a while. That's because I'm looking at their good-looking faces on the screen. So to see what they're saying with my eyes as well as my ears.
But you know, anyway, Don, I didn't even notice it.
No, I didn't notice that either, Don.
Well, I'm not much of a perfectionist, don't worry. So anyhow, the character Brent, the main character, Brent Eby, and Eby is my mom's maiden name. That character is me. I took real experiences from my life and the experiences, for example, of Billy Williams in the book are real life experiences of Billy Juan and me, with one exception. I have a beautiful blonde orthopedic surgeon that the character Brent falls in love with, and that's Billy's daughter. And Billy has a daughter, but she's not an orthopedic surgeon, and he loved her very much. But she's totally fictional. The woman I created, I kind of just thought of Michelle Pfeiffer and what my wife looked like when she was a little younger, and you know, and I created the character.
You did create a very nice character, a very interesting character, and a very resourceful character.
Yeah.
What would you give us just a little idea what the storyline's about, Don?
This started with me thinking, you know, here I am, a former Green Beret, and I'm a cowboy, and I've been a tracker. I used to be a big game guide and hunter in the mid 80s. And I've been on like almost every peak of the Sangre de Cristo mountain range in Southern Colorado on horseback. And I've ridden really rugged. I usually have not ridden on trails. I usually have made my own trails in the old days, not anymore. Now I only want to ride on trails because I'm 78 years old now. But I thought, you know, what if I took a book and told a story where the character is patterned totally after me, which this character is, and I put some of the real life stories from my own life in with the character, maybe fictionalized a little bit on some of them, and, you know, and put a female love interest in there. Got to do that. I'm a romantic. And and so I took the character and I thought, what if jihadist wanted to get the daughters and wives of famous people like Billy Waugh and behead them, you know, to terrorize the toughest fighters there are, Green Berets and, you know, and Army Rangers and, you know, Marine Force Recon, all that. and terrorize them, but mainly Special Forces, which is Green Berets. And I knew a lot of things that were going on because of my sons being Green Berets. And like my sons had friends whose wives were followed during the war in Iraq. The wives were followed to grocery stores and the post office and so on by Mideasterners, usually in suits. And they would walk up to the wife and say, "Why is your husband fighting against Muslims?" And they were making it racial. It wasn't racial. Yeah. And so I have a character in the book that I created who's a police lieutenant who's a Muslim, because I grew up with a lot of Muslims, and I didn't want people to think this was an anti-Muslim book. It's an anti-jihadist book. I thought, what if there was a group of terrorists that wanted to get, in this case, Billy Williams' daughter, and behead her publicly and videotape it, which was their goal, so it could terrorize Americans. And this is a group kind of like ISIS. I created the group. It's called the LL, and I just created the group. And I created the characters in the group. And I just thought, what if I joined forces, like with Billy Waugh in that case, and then what if somebody framed me for murder and it made it look like I was a cop killer? So I have to take her, who's a dude. She's a doctor, an orthopedic surgeon from a city, and take her into the mountains and use survival skills as a Green Beret and a Boy Scout and everything, and keep her safe and keep her warm and all that while we're being chased by a bunch of jihadists. And then on top of that, we're being chased by a law enforcement task force of very angry cops who think I killed a cop.
Right.
And so my character has to protect the cops, because I'm pro-law enforcement. I'm very pro-law enforcement. And but on the other hand, I don't want to protect the jihadists. I want to wipe them out, which I did, or the character did. Yes. So I don't want to spoil the book.
Well, no, yeah.
No, yeah. No,
we have a variety of encounters.
Yeah.
You know, Don, I need to ask this question. Do you have a black Corvette?
Yes, I do. It's identical to the one that I talk about in the book. It's got ghosts.
Okay, so that answered that.
It has ghost flames and a custom black metallic paint job. It's a 81 Corvette.
An 81.
Don't ask me what engine, because I won't tell anybody. It's very fast.
So as Don has just been sharing about how he brings so many of his own personal stories into the book, readers, you will enjoy the way that he does this, because the book is set right in contemporary times. But we take us, Brent, our main character, takes us back through having flashbacks or memories, or he finds himself in a situation and it reminds him of a situation that he had in the past. And so we stay in a straight on line of the action that is happening from moment to moment. But we have these other moments where we get to see Brent as he remembers things. Now, and those are the things that Don is writing those from you know, firsthand experiences. So one of the things, Don, that you write about is a near-death experience. Do you want to share anything about that?
That, what I describe, I fictionalized in it a little bit, but it actually was my near-death experience I had in the 71st Evac Hospital in Pleiku, Vietnam. In 1969, I had been medically evacuated away from my A camp at 2:30 in the morning, and I was in the hospital, and I was having 108 and 109 degree fevers, and they had big fans around my bed in the ward, and they had big buckets of ice, And every once in a while, they'd rip my pajamas off and pack me in ice and turn these fans on, because when you get a fever like that, they have to break it within a minute, or it'll fry your brain. And I was medically evacuated from there to Japan. And it took them a while to figure out what all was wrong with me. And I had several things wrong with me. But the biggest thing was these high fevers were coming from a drug fever that I had from the Army trying to treat me for falciparum malaria, which is the worst kind of malaria, which gives you high fevers. And I was allergic to quinine. So the quinine gave me the tinnitus, or ringing in my ears 24 hours a day, which I still have. And they couldn't figure out what was wrong. And they diagnosed me with everything from cancer to, malaria combined with this and all that. I also had infectious hepatitis at that time. And I had just gotten over dengue fever, and I had just gotten over maybe dysentery. So I was a sick puppy at that time. And so I had a near-death experience where I actually died, and I felt alive, and I was elevated. I was like 7-8 feet in the air behind these two doctors as they walked through the ward, and they were trying to discuss what they were going to do with my body that day when I died, because they didn't want to demotivate all of the soldiers that were in the ward. And they were trying to figure out what room to put me in and my body and so on, before the body could be taken away, I believe, because it was a weekend. And so anyhow, I listened to these doctors talking about me dying. And then I had what we call as alcoholics. I've been, ever since then, I've also been a recovering alcoholic. So I was going through detoxification without knowing it at that time in the hospital. And so I had what was called a spiritual awakening, and I felt the presence of the Holy Spirit in my body. And I felt a healing. And the next day, the fevers were gone, and I was out of bed. And I was going from patient to patient in the ward trying to encourage young men. I was a first lieutenant at the time. And a lot of these guys were privates and private first classes and, specialists. Yeah. And I was, an authority figure, say, in a Green Beret. And so I was going from soldier to soldier, trying to encourage them to hang in there, because they were in there for wounds, and some had been bit. A couple had been bit by banded crates, which are very poisonous snakes, and bamboo vipers, which are very poisonous. So there were a lot of sick puppies in the ward as well. So anyway, that's what happened. And I had that miracle healing, and I had that spiritual awakening, and I also had the near-death experience. I apparently died and during one of those fevers, and was gone. But I didn't get to see all, heaven and all that. I described that a little bit in the book where I fictionalized, because I studied a lot about near-death experiences after that. And I still do. I'm fascinated by it. Yeah. And, saw what people have experienced as heaven. So I described a little of that. And besides, we all can use hope anyway. So I thought that'd be a cool thing to put in there.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a story, Don. Yeah. Quite a story, yeah, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
We're going to step away again for a minute, Don, and we're going to share one of the places that you can find Don and Dell's book that we're talking about, Old Soldiers Never Die. And that is our affiliate page at bookshop.org, the Out West Shop page. So everybody just stay right where you are. We're going to be right back after this. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. Special guest, Don Bendel. We're talking about old soldiers never die. We have some fiction in here and a lot of background real truths about Don and his experiences. But what we're going to ask right now, we're going to talk about characters a little bit. Do these some of these characters, do they ever surprise you? Do they have the mind of their own? Or did you totally create and control them?
I'm surprised every day by people, but these characters are characters. I mean, I wouldn't put them in the book if they weren't characters in real life. So, you know, they and special forces and the CIA, you know, there's just lots of characters that you meet that are just like once in a lifetime people. Billy was a classic example. People still talk about him with a great deal of reference, and he's been gone since 2023. And they aren't a big surprise to me, really. I mean, they are and they aren't. The surprises happen, but the fact that they do happen doesn't really surprise me.
We're going to kind of call out a name. It could be a person or a location or a term that you have in the book. This is not trying to stump you, Don. This is just having our audience have a little bit of an idea about some of what they might encounter when reading the book. So, for instance, what was or is the Phoenix Program?
Well, the Phoenix Program was a program I was in. As an additional duty, it was run by the CIA, and it was a top secret program in Vietnam. It's now been declassified. You can read about it in Wikipedia, but places like that sensationalize it. And so a lot of people, they hear, you were in the Phoenix program, you're an assassin, you know, and all that, because they say it was an assassination program. What it was if you took the mafia, and the mafia bosses, like the Dons and the Capos, and broke that down, not the soldiers, that's the regular members of the mafia, and you had them in a country that they were running the country, that's what the Viet Cong infrastructure was kind of like in Vietnam. You had the Viet Cong, which was the guerrillas. These were the peasants with the black pajamas that worked in the rice fields. And then at night, they'd go in their little tunnels and they would get their AK-47s out and they'd come out and fight the Americans and the South Vietnamese. Then their leaders, they had, let's say you had a shadow government. And so for every mayor, you would have a Viet Cong leader who was a mayor also. Mm-hmm. And for every governor, you would have a shadow governor. And so you had two governments. You had the, you know, the overt government, and then you had the covert government, which was the Viet Cong infrastructure. So the idea in the Phoenix program was to use intelligence to locate and target the leaders of the Viet Cong and the political leaders and to eliminate them. Mm-hmm. And I had a license to kill, so to speak. If I wanted to shoot somebody, I could shoot them. So they didn't want to use loose cannons. Mm-hmm. They were very careful about that. And it's kind of the same way today with some elements of like Delta Force. They literally can get away with murder if they want. And that's why they don't want to have loose cannons.
Yeah.
Because you don't want people taking up personal vendettas or racism or anything like that. Yeah.
You know, the one thing you folks in that war had to contend with was, I think a lot of times you didn't even know who the enemy was.
Well, I did. I made sure I knew. That was my job. That was one reason that I was a coordinator in the Phoenix program for two districts, because my job was to identify who those leaders were that people didn't know were leaders. But it turned out when my camp was eventually overrun, it turned out over half of the Vietnamese Green Berets, the LLDB or Luc Lung Doc Biet, it turned out they were Viet Cong.
Okay.
And so it was an inside job when Doc Peck got overrun eventually.
I'm going to call out another character from the contemporary part of this story, and that's Hondo. Who is Hondo?
Hondo was my German Shepherd. I have a German Shepherd now named Rocky, and I'm so glad he hasn't started barking while we've been talking. I have a German Shepherd and a little Chihuahua, Coco. Well, she's actually my wife's dog. And anyhow, Hondo is, I mean, I grew up in the 50s loving Rin Tin Tin. And Hondo was kind of patterned after Rin Tin Tin. So he's a hero in this book as well.
He is.
And he's assigned to save Suzanne, the female protagonist. And in real life, my wife, who is a beautiful blonde, and she's a doctor, but a doctor of social psychology, if she goes to the bathroom, when I first married her, I told Hondo at that time, I said, "You're in charge of her." And German shepherds kind of sense that.
Yeah.
And so Hondo and Rocky does it now. When she goes in the back bathroom, Rocky will push the door open with his nose and go in and lay down on her feet while she's sitting at the royal throne.
Yeah, and there's protection for you. Yeah.
Very protective. Very protective. And Hondo was that way. Hondo was very smart. And I've always had German shepherds, and Hondo happened to be one of them, and I patterned the character after Hondo. And I usually pattern characters after people or animals that I know. My horse in the book is named Jubilee, and my horse in real life is named Jubilee, and he's a Rocky Mountain horse, which is not a normal cowboy horse. A cowboy horse normally is a quarter horse. Mm-hmm. Rocky Mountain horses were designed for old people like me. I got Jubilee when I got in my 70s, and the arthritis really started bothering me. So they do everything a quarter horse does, but they're gaited. They're like Tennessee Walkers, and they have a very smooth gait. Yeah. So it's very easy on your back when you're riding. So that's Jubilee was patterned after my horse Jubilee. The Corvette was patterned after my Corvette, which is in the garage below me right now while we're
right
talking.
We have one more ad, and then when we come back, Don, we want you to tell us where people can find you and what we're going to be reading next from you. So stay right where you are. And we're stepping away to hear from another of our sponsors. It is a company Jim and I both have, and a sponsor for this show, OutWestShop.com. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking with Don Mandel in his book right here, Old Soldiers Never Die. Don, how can we find you? like your website.
I don't want anybody to find me. I have enough people looking for me, you know. No,
that's pretty good.
My books have all been republished by Speaking Volumes LLC, my current publisher, and they published this book, and I'm writing the sequel to it, Old Soldiers Never Fade Away, and another book based on me. But the character's name's Brent, based on my son, one of my sons. But anyhow, they can find my books at Amazon. I have an author's page at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, all the normal book outlets. You can find the book there. All you have to do is, or you can go to my website, donbendel.com.
Right.
And I have a books page, and it has the covers of all my books. And if you click on the cover, it takes you to that page where you can buy the book, I think at Amazon.
Jim has a little quote. Okay, I'm just looking at time, and we're doing really well. Don, this has been so much fun to share this time with you. We've really enjoyed it. I hope you have too.
Well, I want to say one thing real quick. We just went to a break, and I had perused your shop out west, and I just want to tell people, as a cowboy, you want to get some good stuff, go to their shop.
Thank you.
Well, that's nice of you, Don.
Thank you so much. You need to go shop. We'll send you something.
There you go. Okay. This is one of our characters, Brent, our main character, actually. The talks Brent had with Suzanne's father had put him on guard, and he had given his old friend his solemn word that he would keep Billy's daughter safe. One of Brent's sayings he lived by was, a man or woman is only as good as their word. That meant, as far as Brent believed, that he would keep his solemn oath to Billy, even if it cost his life to do so.
Mm-hmm. And that
I live by Don Bendel's Code of the West, and one of them is, one of the tenets of that is, a man or woman's only as good as their word. It's as simple as that. You give your word, you live and die by it. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. And we agree with you, Don. Absolutely. This is a fabulous book. It is a riveting ride. As I say, hold on to your Stetson. You are going to enjoy this book greatly. And there's some steamy romance on top, too. So,
well, I am a romantic, and I do want to add that these jihadist bad guys in the book want to blow up the Royal Gorge Bridge tourist attraction with a backpack nuclear bomb. Mm-hmm. And so Billy and Don and so on are trying to prevent this from happening. We won't tell you if the book doesn't, I mean, if you come to a part of the book where everything explodes, then, you know, there won't be a sequel, but
no spoiler alerts. Don, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Again, this was episode 136. It will be up on all the various podcast platforms very shortly. You can rewatch it right away on Facebook and off of our website. Next week, our guest is Steve Harris, and he has written a book, Dads Like Us, A Survival Guide for Fathers Raising a Child with Disabilities. And we're really looking forward to sharing some time with Steve next week. And do you have any final thought, Mr.
Bell? We appreciate Don's time tonight. And what we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing, and we'll keep reading, and we'll see you down the trail.